This is the Penobscot Bay Report. I'm Ron Huber. February 27, 2015, Casco Baykeeper Emeritus Joe Payne gave a talk and discussion at the Belfast Unitarian Universalist Church. Joe described his two-decades-plus career as Keeper of Casco Bay and gives his strong support for organizing a Penobscot Baykeeper. Joe suggested a unique affiliate-style Penobscot Bay waterkeeper program that reflects the enormous size of the bay and the different societies, economics, and ecology of the different reaches. Now, this division could be whichever way makes sense. East Penobscot Bay, West Penobscot Bay, Fox Islands, Islesboro, or how about Upper Bay, Outer Bay? Whichever one was selected, the affiliate waterkeepers would eventually come together as one, as a bay-wide waterkeeper. Joe also took questions from pesticide activist Jody Spear of Harborside, right whale defender Mark Dietrich, retired schoolteacher David Smith, critic of the new Hard Rock Mining Rules, LePage administration, educator Linda Bowie on project-based teaching, deep ecologist Hugh Curran of Morgan Bay, a critic of excessive aquaculture, and meeting host Ron Huber, friends of Penobscot Bay. The recording is broken into four parts. This is part one, 15 minutes long.
Yeah, I'll talk about Casco Bay keeping, but also I want to get to the larger issue of water keeping. And for those of you who don't know, water keeper is a generic term for the things that Ron said, you know, river keepers, lake keepers, bay keepers, raw water keepers. And there is an organization, Water Keeper Alliance, which is the umbrella for all of those things. So I'd like to get to that, but Casco Bay Keeper started in 1991. There was a group, Friends of Casco Bay. They had been around for about a year and a half, and they quickly were overwhelmed. Their capacity for volunteer time was overwhelmed. And this is funny, I'm going to contradict myself later, but this is how they told me. They weren't well suited for the work of what came to be baykeeping. The person who started Friends of Casco Bay, Don Perkins, who is the president of Gulfmid Research Institute now, Don has an undergraduate degree in anthropology from Dartmouth and an MBA from Stanford. Obviously a bright guy. I mean, obvious if you meet him. But he didn't know about toxic sediment transport or fishery science or, you know, any of that stuff, which later I would say you don't need to be a water keeper. But they found it not helpful because they were getting very specific questions. And in my mind, the whole key to being a successful water keeper or a successful advocate is credibility. And you only get credibility if you only talk about what you know, and you need to know something. And so when an issue comes up, you have to teach yourself about it. So, you know, an anthropologist with a job, another job, would be hard put to come to terms with sediment transport and, you know, toxics and things. So that's why they felt, I think, not up to the task. So they worked for a year and a half, and they said, all right, we got to do something different. This isn't working. We are not being as effective as we had hoped, and the bay needs a lot more attention than we can give it. I believe that's true every place. I believe that's absolutely true in Penobscot Bay. It needs a lot of attention because there's a lot going on. I have to say, I do take these side turns all the time, but I really liked what you said about, you know, when something good's going on, people are drawn to it. And I think you said 80 or 90 people came around that Morgan Bay Preserve because that's something to hold on to, the good parts, Earth Day celebration. You know, it's good to hold on to those things because at least in my business, you're exposed to an awful lot of bad news and discouraging things. And the current administration is, you know, very discouraging. They're also rewriting the Vernal Pool rules, which it was a real great win to have those good Vernal Pool rules. But anyway, so skip all the fun parts about I didn't tell Kim for a month that I saw an ad in the paper about Casco Bay Keeper, et cetera, and put in my resume and eventually was hired. And my thoughts on it, I'm a Casco Bay native. You'll see, I guess I must say it all the time, but my first trips on the bay were in utero and then continued. I really love Casco Bay and the Casco Bay regions in my blood. So I got the job, but I thought about the job ahead of time, and there was a way that I would approach it, and that was in sync with the way friends of Casco Bay, who preceded me by a year and a half, how they thought about it, because they went around and talked to people in the watershed, and many people were familiar, surprisingly, with the waterkeeper model, which until Casco Bay Keeper was a litigious model. The biggest tool waterkeepers would tell you that they have is the Clean Water Act and the citizen suit provision. So any of us can sue anyone else, government agency, someone we deem a polluter, whoever it is. There's niceties involved. The state can take over the case, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the strongest tool. And sometimes it's used for nothing else than to get people to the table because they won't come otherwise. Here, that I have not found that to be true. I'll try to say I could, but only 6 weeks away from my job, I might say I can. But I could get a meeting with, I think, anybody. I did meet with anybody over 24 years. But my colleagues will say we couldn't even get through the receptionist to talk to the person we needed to talk to. So they sue them. And sometimes they sue them because not just to talk to them, they sue them because they need suing. And one of my colleagues, someone here may know him, Mike Hurris, he lives in Damariscotta now. Mm-hmm. He was the San Francisco Bay Keeper. And through his lawsuit, two people went to jail. The first people jailed under the Clean Water Act. But I thought that was not, that's a tool in a waterkeeper's toolkit, not one I felt we would have to use very often in Casco Bay, and as it turned out, we didn't. We, in 24 years, didn't sue anybody. Did we talk to lawyers? Oh, yeah. Lots and lots of lawyers, lots of times, to find out, because they have a whole different toolkit than I had. They know a lot of stuff about the Clean Water Act and RCRA and CERCLA and other laws you can use to get people to do what they should do. So I talk to lawyers a lot. That's one of the resources from the Waterkeeper Alliance. They have very good environmental attorneys, many of whom have set case law in the United States. I would note, too, we are very lucky to have the Clean Water Act, so we should all remember to thank Senator Muskie for that, because other places like Canada, an evolved country, a kinder, gentler place, I think, they don't have a Clean Water Act. They have to work through and around the Fisheries Act to try to get some things done that we can do clearly through the Clean Water Act. So we're lucky we have it. But my thought was, these are the people I went to high school with, these are the people I grew up with. Yep. I lived on Peaks Island in the summer, Portland in the winter. And I thought, you know, there's a different way that we can do this. And the Waterkeeper Alliance and John Cronin, who was the first waterkeeper, the Hudson River Keeper, and he made all the news. That's why at the time I started in 91, if anyone knew about waterkeepers, because of John Cronin. He did some really innovative lawsuits. He sued Exxon for theft of natural resources because Exxon would discharge the oil into New York City someplace. And then they would flush their tanks and they would take fresh water from the Hudson and go back to Aruba or Venezuela or someplace. So they were stealing fresh water and John sued them for it. And he won. I thought we can do it a different way. So our model was to work with as opposed to starting out working against. Many of the people my colleagues have problems with only know about it when they get a 60-day notice, it's called the 60-day notice of intent to sue. The way that Casco Bay Keeper did it was to call them up and say, let's meet and let's talk about it. And I'm here to tell you, after 24 years of experience, especially in later years, my first 2-3 years, not everyone had heard of Friends of Casco Bay or Casco Bay Keeper, but it still worked the same. And I have this very strong mental picture. One example of a processing facility on a wharf who was doing a terrible job with their waste. And I went in to talk to them. And, you know, I mean, literally, the guy kind of put his head down and shuffled his feet and said, you know, yeah, I know you're right. That's mostly the response I got. And it doesn't matter if it was, for us, a large corporation or a small operation that was polluting. They understood. Usually they knew it, you know, before I showed up, they knew what they were doing. But sometimes I would put more on it than they had understood, or put on it the trouble they could be in. My colleague, Terry Backer, the Long Island Soundkeeper, tells people, you're lucky it's me that's here, which they never think, because he's a very gruff individual, very large individual. But he said, if this were the government, you're talking about $25,000 a day fine, which is, you know, the going fine for pollution if you're found guilty of it. So that's how we were able to work. And it worked fantastically until this administration. I mean, this is really an anomaly. You know, I worked with McKernan and Brennan and King and Baldacci, et cetera. And as I was saying earlier, I really believe it's in how you develop a relationship. And that's why I say, you know, Gary Fish, you may be appalled to hear, we gave Gary Fish an award. He worked with us. He was absolutely to our thinking. You know, we'd sit down with Gary and say, okay, what are we looking for? Why are we looking for it? And we'd say, you know, we're worried about development and what's happening from development. And he would say, well, you know, this year, here are the 6 chemicals that are going to come off the roads, and that's what we should test for. And we say, okay, good, we'll, you pay for the analysis, we'll go do the testing. And so we thought that was a great accommodation. But we were simpatico on the goals. So that's the only way I know Gary, but I do know other people that I worked with over 24 years who I consider them environmentalist and helpful, and other people, you know, someone say in an agency at DEP or DMR, and other people think they're a waste of space, you know, that they are in opposition to what they do. We were not easy on polluters. I remember the first, one of our first donations of $3,000, we wrote them a letter and said, thank you very much. I hope you understand, this doesn't buy you any favors. You know, we were really insulting it, I think, looking back on it. But we said, you know, if you do anything untoward, we're coming after you as hard as we can. So like I say, and while I would not have gone to the press first, I would go to the polluter. I wouldn't hesitate afterwards, because the power of the press really makes people move off the dime. So that, I think, you know, in a nutshell, it was cooperate, work with. One of the people in Portland who Don interviewed before they moved on to a Baykeeper model was Petey Merrill, God rest his soul, from Merrill Industries on the waterfront in Portland. And Petey said, I can't support the idea of a Baykeeper. He said, that's crazy. In my business, that would be like having a gun to my head the whole time. PD became one of our staunchest supporters when he saw that. We meant it. We meant we're going to work with polluters until they won't. And we're going to be consistent, and we're not going to sometimes rush to the press, sometimes go to people we liked. You know, it's going to be same fair play for everybody every time.